Blog Talk Radio.
Shake, baby, if you think you're shy, the
Better Love, and welcome to the Truth to Power Show. And I'm Beverly, and we have Eddie Rodriguez with us tonight and a special guest. Greetings, Eddie Rodriguez.
Greetings to you, Better Love, Beverly. Thanks so much for inviting me back to your show, Truth to Power, every Thursday from 9 to 11 p.m. You're coming from Detroit, Michigan. I'm coming from Eagle. And tonight we have a special guest. We have an interview with one of the pioneers, a living legend in the world of tropical Latin music, as a booking agent, as an artist manager, as an international concert tour manager, and a mentor and a friend. The incredible, the amazing Richie Bonilla, a living legend, promoter in the Latin industry since the 50s. Welcome to Truth to Power, Richie. How you doing? How are you doing tonight?
Which number is Richie? I have to push one so I could see him on the switchboard.
Richie was calling in. I gave him the call-in number.
Okay, what's the area code that I could find him?
The area code, Richie's area code is, hold on a second. I mean, I can get him on this line, you know, but...
But he's probably here. I have to see.
Okay.
I just need the area code, that's all.
Okay, his area code is, hold on a minute. Area code, what's his area code here? His area code, info is, hold on a second. 917-699.
Okay, I see him. Okay. All right. Awesome. Great to have you with us tonight.
Yeah, of course, you're a problem already.
No, not that. That was my mistake. We had to have you dial one when you called.
Yeah.
But welcome to the show, Richie. I was just telling everyone what an honor it is to have you tonight for this interview. I shared with Beverly and her listeners before you came on about, you know, your amazing years as a pioneer, you know, and one of the original tropical salsa music promoters, artist, manager, talent agent, concert promoter, tour promoter, a mentor, and like I said, a friend. And we want to talk to you tonight about your experiences in the business, the multi-million-dollar Latin tropical or tropical Latin music industry. Welcome to the show.
Well, Eddie, I heard and I love that intro, and I'm going to have to hire you as my press agent. That was incredible. Thank you.
I won't tell anybody you gave me $20 before the show again.
You said it just the way we rehearsed it this morning.
Well, Richie, you know, we just heard Pete Rodriguez. You know, I just wanted Beverly and her listeners. You know, this is a public service program, a podcast that we do on Thursday. It's a conversation between Puerto Rican from New York and an African American woman from Detroit. You know, we grew up with different music influences, you know, her with the Motown and even with the salsa. And you are a big part of the growth of the Latin music industry. You know, when did you decide to do this professionally? I mean, and who were some of the people that were doing this before you?
Yeah, well, my brother, Benny Bonilla, after World War II, in the late 40s, he was a musician. So as a young kid, I had the opportunity to meet unknown artists like Eddie Palmieri and Joe Quijano and Orlando Marin, because they used to hang out with my brother. They were the same age. And my brother was a percussion and a percussion player. He played conga. So, of course, the kid likes to emulate his older brother. So I got interested in playing the conga. And then about 1950, I started throwing, you know, at that time there was no TV, there was no internet, no Xbox. So I started throwing these little house parties, not to make money, just to create that Latin industry, that interest with my group of, you know, we all had our little cliques, you know. So I started throwing these little parties at the apartments or fix up a nice area in the basement and put low lights and, you know, fix that. And so that's how I started getting interested. Then Tito Puente, 1950, his Ran Can Can. I really got involved with that number. I loved it. And then I left alone, I joined the service. But when I came out of the service in 1957, my whole group of crowd, my crowd, they all started getting married. And being that they knew my brother was in the music industry, they were asking me to get a band to play for their wedding. So I always try to book a band that my brother was playing with. And Pete Rodriguez, he lived on the same block as we lived in the Bronx. So he lived on Simpson Street in the Bronx. And my brother was playing with Pete. So that's how my involvement became with Pete Rodriguez. So then I would go down to 10th Avenue. Or we made a demo record. And with that demo record, I went to all the distributing offices that were on 10th Avenue to see if someone would be interested in recording the band. And I was lucky. I got this company called Remo Records, and they recorded an LP. And then they shelved it. But with that LP, I was able to go to Tico Records. And they heard it and they loved it. And they got producer Pancho Cristal to do the I Like It Like That album. And then there was a huge explosion. And, you know, everything is timing because there were so many second and third generation Puerto Ricans, you know, born in New York that didn't even speak Spanish, but they liked their Latin rhythms. So this was just perfect for them because it was English lyrics with the Latin rhythm. So there was this huge explosion. It was incredible.
Well, we know that explosion to be the Boogaloo era. And you worked with artists like Joe Cuba, Joe Batan, Johnny Colon, the Brum Brothers, all those, you know, Boogaloo era artists.
Yeah, about 15 Boogaloo artists. I kept them very busy. But Pete was considered, not by me, but he was crowned the king of Boogaloo. Because not only did he had the real first big Boogaloo smash, but my brother Benny, who was the timbalero, he adapted the quarter beat that became the downbeat sound of the Boogaloo that you groove to, you know, that ba ba da 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 da, that downbeat, and then everybody else adopted, or the other band adopted that quarter beat. So it was incredible. It was, and it opened so many avenues of work for all these artists, because that Boogaloo was a smash in all the states, and even I started opening some avenues to Venezuela and to Panama and Lima and Guadeloupe and Martinique, which is incredible. Just snowball, you know. It was an important time that created a lot of work for our Latin musicians in the Latin industry.
Oh, Richie, the author or the songwriter of I Like It Like That, Tony Pavón, mm-hmm. was with Pete Rodriguez for years, And then they decided to form their own group called Tony Pamón y La Protesta. Tell us a little bit about that before we go into some more music, and then we'll talk more on the flip side. But just tell us a little bit about that happening.
Well, that's unfortunately, we were so busy for, a good 5-6 years, and like I said, opening avenues for everybody. And there was a lot of harmony in the band because we were from the same neighborhood. And then, unfortunately, we were doing a tour in Panama, and somebody got into Pete's ear. And I don't know why he told him, but he had, a personality change with his musicians. He was complaining about my brother's drumming. He was saying that he didn't need me to book him, which was incredible because I built him from unknown to the big star he became. But he was a change of personality. So that's how the group broke up. Tony didn't start La Protesta because he wanted to do his own thing or anything like that. It's just unfortunate. It just dissolved, So then that's when Tony picked up La Protesta. And I had a lot of success. Of course, my brother was in the band. And so I kept that band working a lot also.
Well, let's listen to some more music. I think we have more Pete Rodriguez and a little bit more, and some Tony Pavón y La Protesta. So without any further ado, Beverly.
All right. Okay. And I want to thank you, Richie, for giving us your time and energy and joining us this evening. I appreciate that.
Oh, that's very nice of you to say that, and it's my pleasure to meet you by phone, at least. Maybe someday we'll cross paths in person.
Yes, we will. Okay, now, wait a minute, hold on, this is live. Let me go to Pete. I just lost my place here. Hold on a minute. Bear with me.
This show is live, unedited, and totally 100% impromptu. The questions and the answers and everything else are in the moment. So thank you for listening in.
All right. Here we go.
Come on, let's have a soul party. Turn yourself loose. Yeah. I'm gonna tell you. Let me see you clap your hands. I'm gonna see my baby.
Te dicen que me ven siempre vacilando, y a ti te dicen que siempre estoy metido en el bembe, que de los chistes soy más que río, y de la ceba soy un buscalío. Llamarme a mí un loco, eso sí, tiene que ver. Date cuenta que esta vida es tan corta, y lo único que uno se lleva es lo que goza. Goza, loco.
introducing to you Mr. Pete Rodriguez.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And for my latest basket of cheers, here it goes, baby.
Ooh, ah!
Thank you.
All righty. We're back with Eddie Rodriguez and his guest, Richie.
So here.
All right. Eddie Rodriguez.
Yeah, I want to say a little number of that last song, and of I Like It Like That. That was interesting. Can I? Hello?
Yeah, go say uh-huh.
Can I go on?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely, Richard.
Okay.
Yes.
All
yes.
Right.
Yes.
What was interesting, when we recorded those two numbers in the studio, we have all our wives with us. My wife, my brother's wife, all the musicians' wives were there just to watch. And the producer of the record thought it was a good idea to use the wives as a live audience, and they should participate singing "I Like It Like That," and so all that. Scandal, I don't know how to say it in English. All that excitement and cheering you hear in the background, our wives making
wow.
all that racket in those tunes.
That tune that we heard, Micaela, about people drinking from earlier, we heard "I Like It Like That." And then we heard "Loca" by the La Potencia. That was kind of the beginning of even my interest in Latin music. You know, we used to hear Spanish music from my parents, and I grew up in Brazil. And I wasn't really gravitated to that. I was gravitated more to the Motown sound before that. You know, whatever music was playing on AM radio, top 40. And we didn't get much of anything except that once Ray Barreto came out with Watusi. On 77 WABC. And so, you know, as far as Latin music, that was part of my beginning as well. La Protesta went on, that period with Boogaloo and experience with Peter Rodriguez and performing of La Protesta and really getting into Latin music as a, you know, promoting, booking artist weddings. Who were the main promoters of that time that were around, you know, booking, you know, artists in the New York club scene or any concerts or any other, even weddings? Who was it?
You're talking about in the Boogaloo era?
In the Boogaloo era, well, even before that, the people that were there before you in New York City that were pretty much in control of booking the Latin groups and had a Latin band that were recording artists and were booking. I know one of them, the first one that I knew as doing, you know, shows, promoting shows, was a gentleman by the name of Federico Pagani. Then I knew about another gentleman with a what I heard was a gentleman by the name of Jose Curbelo, who also had a band and booking groups. And then he made a move. He was representing Tito Puente. From what I understand, he decided to move to Florida from New York, and that's how Ralph Mercado inherited that management. Of the King of Latin Music at the point. I don't know if I'm missing anybody else.
Well, also, he was already in his 90s. You know, he was getting up there in age. You know, everybody forgets, you know, his era was the 40s, you know, and the early 50s. And then he was, we forget that these guys, they're out there and they're aging, you know. Well, there was some great, before that Boogaloo era, there was some great orchestras like Vicentico Valdez. You know, he was the king of the bolero. You know, so many of people got married because of all the beautiful numbers he put out. And we had then with the Machito band, and then that's how when Tito Puente started with his band and the Tito Rodriguez, there was a lot of good music out there. And then we had that little period of charanga with Charlie Palmieri. He started it off. with Alegre Vecchis. His flute player was Johnny Pacheco. And then Johnny left and started his own group, and that was like, that was a big explosion at that time. There was a lot of talent. Plus, the younger talent, the up-and-coming groups that I used to work with, also besides the ones that I was fortunate enough to help into the upper level of music, like Ernie Augusto, La Conspiración, Orquesta Flamboyant, Joy Pastrana. There was Johnny Ray, La Solución 76. There was a lot of good young groups out there. Orquesta Colón. There was plenty of music and plenty of clubs in New York that they could get work. And I have a relationship with all those owners that have good relationships in New York, from Lower Manhattan all the way up to Upper Manhattan. There were so many clubs. In Brooklyn, there were clubs. Every borough, Queens had clubs. And it was just, you know, it made it easier to get these, keep these bands working, you know. And then so many Latinos started moving in to the other states. And in New Jersey, where there was the clubs, and Connecticut, and Boston, even in Chicago. I used to go to Chicago all the time. We used to do Chicago and Lorain, Ohio, Washington. It was just a huge explosion. And then where you come from, the West Coast, there was a big explosion there too, you know, offering music to all these artists. So that was a beautiful time. That was the right, if you was, you wanted a career in this music, that was the right era to be alive.
No, I was going to say, what time period was that when it was booming?
The 70s, I would imagine.
The 70s?
Because it was busy. Well, it was always busy before also. But, of course, when Fania Records started recording all these great artists and they promoted them all over the world, that's when the music exploded everywhere. You know, I did business in 6 continents. With the efforts and the promotion of Jerry Masucci and his group, Fania Records. And then we had a promoter called Rafi Mercado, which was a very good friend of Eddie Rodriguez. And Eddie Rodriguez was the West Coast. What was your title in the West Coast, Eddie?
I was head of RMM West Coast operations.
Yeah, I mean, it's already just, so in the 70s, it really got big. But there was an industry before that, you know, like I was saying, like from the 60s. I started the Boogaloo, because then they had the Boogaloo era, and then the charanga music came in for a few years, real big. And then the salsa came in, so and then Latinos kept coming in, relocating into New York and the neighboring states also. So there was a lot to draw from, you know. It just was, so mostly it started. Do you agree, Eddie, about the 70s with the Fania that we really had the the big explosion there?
Absolutely. Not only that, but, you know, in the late 70s, you know, one of the things that I saw happen, you know, from that big band era, you know, the bands started getting smaller. I remember TPGAT 73 when it became like such a big hit, you know, during that time, because it had a smaller group. And then all the other groups, you know, that you had at that time as well, you know, were smaller groups, not that big band, you know, including some legendary artists that you worked with that we're going to hear next, like Tim Mayer and Monty Torunigo, and some others that came your way that you booked during that time. So Beverly, let's go into some more music at Rich Sheep. These are some of the artists that Richie represented and worked with, become legendary, and others that became more unknown and became known thanks to the sacrifice and hard work of Ricky Bonilla.
All right.
Oiga, señora, no ha visto usted mi jean, dígale que venga enseguidita aquí. Hay un nuevo ritmo que está acabando aquí. Dígale que venga, que se lo voy a enseñar.
La criolla está en la olla,
suavecito.
Meneala,
meneala, meneala, meneala.
La criolla está en la olla.
Ligerito no. Está acabando aquí, dígale que venga, que se lo quiero enseñar. ¡Loco! Loco, que me patina el coco. Ella me da ese apelativo sin saber por qué. A la 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 la, a la le, 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 dígame usted. Si a ti te dicen que me ven siempre vacilando, si a ti te dicen que siempre estoy metido en el bembe, que de los chistes soy más que río y de la ceba soy un buscalío. Llamarme a mí un loco, eso sí, tiene que ver. Darse cuenta que esta vida es tan corta y lo único que uno se lleva es lo que goza. Goza, loco, loco seré.
Por ti, linda mujer.
Ella me da ese apelativo
Bella y pura. dura, esa sí que es linda.
You are listening to the Truth to Power Show with Eddie Rodriguez and a special guest, legendary Richie Bonelli. I think I said that right.
that was a good try. It's Richie Bonilla from the Bronx.
Bonilla.
In the house. Bonilla. All right. Richie, wow, thank you once again for being so kind with your time to be with us tonight and share some of your experiences one of the pioneers and one of the living legends of tropical salsa music promoters and artist managers and booking agents, since the 1960s up until today. You're still, involved with groups that call you for advice and ask for your, advice, obviously, and your consultation. And, one of them in particular is in Japan, Orquesta de la Luz, that I can speak about, that you discovered in the 90s. But talking about some of the artists that we just heard, we heard a little, we heard from La Protesta again, and then we heard from Frankie Dante in the Flamboyant with Mark Dine on the piano.
Good
about that experience and booking those groups during the heyday. They were unknown. We also heard in the beginning, we heard in Maya Rivera, the legendary in Maya Rivera.
Yeah.
That was someone that was also had a tragic ending to his career. But tell us the times that you were with them and how they became familiar with you as a professional, or how you approach them to start working with you.
Well, we talk about Mark. It was tragic because he was such a talented person. He died so young. Eddie, did you cue up anything for a week along on Hector Lavoe?
We also have a few other groups, Frankie Ruiz and Eddie Santiago, so that's on the next set.
Oh, that's on the next, because that was such a dynamic combination, visually and musically, that was such a such an exciting period in our land industry, So that'll be your next segment.
That's our next segment, yes.
And I'm looking forward that your partner on this show, one day that she interviews, they interview Eddie Rodriguez, because no one knows more about this land industry than Mr. Eddie Rodriguez. So I'd like to hear, and
yes,
your audience will be amazed.
I would like to hear it too. I have both of you are two giants in the industry. And a lot of information, a lot of wisdom that you could share with the people.
Yeah, you could discuss with me what was, but what's happening in the 21st century? You got to interview Eddie Rodriguez. He's up with what's. Yeah,
Ricky, thank you so much. I'm honored, and I'm grateful to have a mentor like you, and like Rob, the right thing, seeing a lot of people do the wrong things, and that's how I wanted to have a reputation in my career, put the musician and the artist first, you put people before profits, and unfortunately, there was a lot of promoters and agents and managers that put profit before people, before the artists and the musicians. That's not the professional I learned how to become. With people like you that was straight, transparent, and had a good relationship with the artists that they wanted to work with you because you did the right thing, the right way, and treated them with a lot of respect. You know, so
yeah, that's true.
I think
there would be no superstars if it wasn't for the Simon that they have playing the instruments and the arrangements the way they're supposed to be played. You know,
exactly.
That's how the main artist, the main singer, you know, looks so good because he got that. So they're just, to me, the Simon are just important as the artist, the main artist. Or the band leader.
Yeah, it's funny. I've done so many shows, and I've always made it my business to thank the musicians, you know, and take their hands, and you know, their love, they appreciate it for the work that they just did. And so, definitely the musicians. You know, it's funny how the industry changed, and you know, in the 2020s, like after the 90s, you know, there was a new kind of way of promoting Latin music. You know, the Latin urban was kind of in. They wanted to pay the bands anymore. They wanted to pay a DJ to come in and play, you know, then for 2 hours, someone who was on the radio who had some following. And, the live shows. You know, these club owners decide to go that route. And then they started offering some meager wages to the bands, you know, like that were unacceptable. So we had a lot of people just stop doing live shows because the offers to perform were so dreadful, so to speak. But talking about Frankie Dante, talking about, you know, Imagine that, talking about Puerto Rico and, those experiences you had with those artists are incredible. Some of them, you know, like I said, had a tragic ending, like Mark and but audiences that they, you know, played in front of, that enjoyed their music, you know, and at their, you know, in life they weren't given enough credit, you know, for their talent, God given talent.
Right.
I want to get your feedback on, you know, what your thoughts were about that.
You know, groups like La Constelación, you mean, and the Flamboyant?
Exactly.
That second level of group.
Exactly.
Yeah, they
didn't get the break that a lot of other groups got at that time.
Yeah, they, you know, besides talent, to become a superstar, let's use that way, is you need a lot of luck also. It's not only talent, is being in the right place at the right time and I don't know why some of these artists, you know, didn't take off like other artists, because there's a lot of, you know, that second level of artists were just incredible. But there's another group that never gets any credit, and without that group, there'd be no superstars. And I did business in 6 continents, and I'm here, you know, 60 plus years. And I really mean this, that if it wasn't for the audience, the people that they work, they're out there, they work 9 to 5, and they're home all the time, and they don't miss no birthdays, no anniversaries, no Christmas. They're there for the kids all the time. Those are the real superstars in this industry. And yet they find the time to go to the concerts, to sort of to celebrate live music, to support it, and they buy the CDs and the videos. If it wasn't for the audience, there'd be no superstars. And the audience don't get any credit. You know, so I just have to apologize to you for taking this platform to mention that, because I feel that from my heart that the audience there, you know, we unfortunately we have to go away on holidays to perform in other countries and all that, and we're not there for our families all the time, you know, but they're there and they're supporting us and they're listening. I want to thank them, you know, for their support of live music.
Yeah, thank you.
They deserve a big thanks.
Yeah. Now, what kind of advice could you give people today that a person wants to get into the business as a promoter or a producer? Is it kind of different than back then, or is it basically the same?
There's no basic. There's no, nothing exists today that was there during my 60 years. The opportunities are not there. There are no major clubs in New York City, which is unbelievable. There's not one. When in our era, every borough had 3, 4, and 5 clubs that you could go every day of the week, Monday, Tuesday, when it don't matter. And on Broadway, from 145th Street and 144th Street on Broadway, there was a club called Broadway Casino. The next block, there was I forget now, but on the 40 mm-hmm. The Cabrejeño, and then 47th, there was 140. In the span of 15 blocks, there was like 4 clubs, and they were all doing business. It was incredible. And then the Lower Manhattan, That's gone. There's no clubs today in New York. There's no promoters doing anything. Once in a while, Madison Square Garden or back or Barclays Center, they do a concert, but they invite just the superstars from yesterday to perform. Mm-hmm. That's not a venue for an up and coming artist. There's no venues for up and coming artists.
So
this is a very difficult.
What about other cities, you know, besides New York? Is that everywhere, or is this in New York?
Well, and I think Eddie would agree to this. You know, every so many years, 5, 6, 7 years, a new generation comes out dancing, you know, and they don't want to dance to what was there. They want to dance to something that's their own. And there's this music that's coming in from Santo Domingo called reggaeton. And what's the other name? There's another name for another. Yeah, reggaeton or something else.
Bachata.
And that's why, like, the younger generation is gravitating towards. Plus, you know, ironically, there's more people dancing to salsa today than ever before, because they have these dance studios all over the world. Eddie's from Los Angeles. There was a guy called Albert Torres. He used to have a 4-day weekend in Los Angeles, and dancers would come from 40 different countries there for a week. It was incredible. But they learn how to dance, the students, and they learn how to dance to DJ music. So they're not even interested in seeing live music. They just want to dance to the downbeat that they hear for whatever record the DJ plays. So it's incredible that there's more dancers today, but not more opportunities for live music. I used to take to Japan, there was every country dancing. I used to take orchestras over, you know, 14-piece orchestra, 15-piece. Now they take a one DJ and the dance team to give demonstration and lessons, and the place packed. So now they have three airfares, three hotels. They don't have to pay for it. So this era has hurt the live music industry, and it's not the kids' fault, because they go, that's what's there, and they go to learn, you know. They don't know what was here, you know. So at first I was really critical about that, but it's not that their fault. It's what's being taught. So the answer to your question is no. It's not the same opportunities, and I don't see it changing for you know, I don't see it changing. I'm 87, and they're still calling me saying, Richard, you gotta get out there. There's nothing happening, you know, because there's no young people interested in opening a book club or having a booking agency or a promotion agency. It's just not happening. You know,
You know, I'm looking at, you know, that there's clubs here in Michigan that have live entertainment. But like you say, they have to have that booking. Someone has to have that booking agency to connect the artists with the club owners. I guess that's how you do it. That's what the booking agency
is. But when I used to go to Chicago, we used to go to the Aragon Ballroom, and that Aragon Ballroom was packed. I'm sure there's no Aragon Ballroom today, or no ballroom like it in Chicago. I'm sure they're all small venues. That whole maybe. Am I right about that?
What's happening is today is that you have the big concert promoters, AEG and Live Nation.
Are you breaking up, Eddie? We can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, much better.
Oh, okay. I was saying that, Richard, you know, AEG and Live Nation, you know, they're the top global concert promoters, and you know, they manage venues. They don't only book talent and book the concert tours, but they manage the venues, so they pretty much control who performs in those venues. They pay a huge advance, have artists' advances, you know, to do a certain amount of shows, and we talk about it in all genres, the general market, urban and pop country, and in Latin. Recently, someone that I know for years from Chicago, who I met when he started in the 80s, was in a show that he produced with Eddie Palmieri and Maurice Voigt, a gentleman by the name of Henry Cardenas, who pretty much started in Chicago and started doing tours and, you know, created a company and called his marketing network, and you know, started representing A-list artists, in the Latin music world, and most recently, he was just acquired by AED, his company, Cardenas Marketing Network, CMN, for example, was recently acquired by AED to become their Latin division. I mean, they made a deal with Henry for hundreds of millions of dollars for him to become the Latin division, so to speak, of AEG. So the industry has changed. There's other people. Aragon is controlled by Live Nation. We have shows. We have a Mark Anthony who's represented by Henry, who's doing a world tour. He's performing in 50 countries. The Latin urban artist by the name of Bad Bunny, that this kid, started, you started hearing about him in 2017, and today he is, in the hundreds of millions of and his network. You know, it's different today, you know, but every 20 years or so, like, you know, there's a new crop of Latin singers and urban singers. Some music is back on the rise. You know, Jeremy Sufi had millions of dollars that were invested into promoting the Fine All-Stars. Ralph McConnell and Fine Records. And Ralph McConnell, they both rest in peace, spent millions of dollars promoting his artists on the RMM label, including Mark Anthony and all the artists we see working today. And, you know, not only recording them, but spending money on promotions and radio and having representatives all over the world pushing his music to get airplay and to be played in nightclubs with the consumers. You know, we're on go to the record shop at that time. You know, pitch the new releases to the owners of the record shop so they can buy and sell to their clients. So, you know, the music industry has changed dramatically. You have to be able to grow marketing, digital marketing, and social media, you know, is a huge driver. And who's going to get promoted, who's the record labels or the investors that are going to put their money behind. So, you know, this is a different world today. You're right, there's not clubs anymore like before. But I think there's a comeback. And there's always, you know, songs are always bouncing back, you know, and I think this is the moment that it's bouncing back. We'll come up with a superstar of soft music in this era, like, say, you know, came up in the 90s and in the 70s. So. That's something to look forward to. But, you know, Beverly, before we, you know, run out of time, I want to play another set and get back to Richie and talk a little bit about Hector Lavoe and some of the other artists that are playing. We're going to wrap up tonight with one of his discoveries from Japan, Orchestra de Illusion. So without any further ado, whenever you're ready, Beverly.
All right.
Quiero que sea que llores si yo me muero mañana.
Power Show with Eddie Rodriguez and our special guest Richie. Yes.
Hey Richie, thank you so much for joining. Just a few words about Eddie Santiago and that whole movement with Montes and obviously we heard Monguito El Obispo on those.
Yeah, I start with Monguito, working with Monguito, because I love that his arrangements. I love that tumbao, that Cuban swing he had, And then he was very famous for a little. He used to express himself. He used to say "Sí, señor," and everybody loved that. So he was famous for that, and. Yeah, he was. He had a good group together, and I did a couple of tours with him. And Eddie Santiago, that was a new wave. He started something, boy, with that salsa from Romantico. That soft swing salsa, just love songs, And I was sitting in my office, and they're playing this unknown artist. They're playing him. 3, 4, 5 times the next day. The radio, they're playing 3, 4, 5 times. Oh, my God. Anybody with that kind of airplay is going to get a big hit. So I left my office. I went straight to the airport, and I flew to Puerto Rico. And I found out where he was working that Saturday, and I went to the gig, and I introduced myself. And on we went for dinner after the show, and on a napkin, I signed him up. And nobody knew who he was. So the first thing I did, but the song was hitting all the radio station. So I did, I ordered like about 500 posters with his photo on it and the name of the song, and I posted all over the city. And then with the relationship I had with all the clubs, I just called them and asked them for a gig for this artist that would do well for them. And I brought him in, and then we did the whole the whole tour of Europe and South America and Central America, and everywhere he went, he sold out. He did he helped that period of our industry a lot. And then a lot of other artists followed him with that same style, and they all did well.
One of those artists, obviously, besides Frankie Greasy, who at that time, also was in that crowd, and there's some other people in the crowd as well, doing that salsa romantica, and some controversy. Some people didn't like it. It's so slow and. What salsa munga, they called it. And, pretty much everyone was, I think what they call salsa duda or salsa theme park. It had so much influence in the arrangements and orchestration, and the delivery and the background vocals. And, it was just so many things with the finer that were so interesting and appealed to people all over the world, back from jazz
right.
to rock. So, not particularly a salsa romantica period, believe it or not. Those artists are still famous. That music is still famous in South America, in Peru, in Ecuador, in Colombia, in Venezuela.
Yeah.
They still want that salsa from that era. And in particular now, because like you said earlier, people are still dancing salsa all over the world. Except for places like New York. It's funny because in Los Angeles now, when I got there was two clubs, a club called Virginia's and another one called Candelas. Today you have the clubs all over L.A. and down in Anaheim and up all the way up to Santa Barbara. We have salsa clubs and... most recently, one salsa club called the Conga Room closed down. I think it's because the joint ran out, and the place is very good. It's right across the Staples Center, so you can imagine how expensive it might be. But it was a few years, and but there's other clubs in L.A. that, were not there when I got there in the late 70s, and salsa music is around the world thanks to people like Albert Torres, the rest in peace, who was out there promoting it. And I was doing concerts out there throughout the years and promoting salsa artists. So, New York is not a salsa town. Even Puerto Rico, Latin urban music is music of the day of the youth. And now I'm seeing some of these Latin urban artists go towards salsa, which is quite interesting. So I think we're going to see a lot more talk about the music in the coming year. Richie, before we leave, I want to thank you once again. We're going to do part two next week. There were some of your artists that you worked with that we were able to talk about tonight. That I want to get into the conversation about Nicola Cole and about Frankie Luis and in particular about Orquesta de la Luz. And some of the artists that are from the area, Ruben Blades, and so many others that you worked with throughout the years that just not enough time in one two-hour program, podcast, to really go deep into some of your experiences and all of the continents that you visited. You
basically opened the doors for what we call today the multi-million-dollar tropical salsa music industry. And back in your days, it was generating hundreds of thousands of dollars, but today it's generating multi-millions and up to $1 billion if you look at the extent of time that tropical music, salsa in particular, has been on the scene. So you were one of those pioneers and one of the living legends, the original salsa music promoters from New York City. So thank you very much for your time, and we're going to hope to see you next week. Right here on Beverly D's Blog Talk Radio Show podcast, Truth to Power. So without any further ado, Beverly, I don't know if you have any closing words.
Yes. I just want to thank both of you, salsa giants, legendaries, for spending your time here with us. And I look forward to next week.
All right. Sounds like
and
a plan.
And I want to say... Okay, and I want to say better love.
All right, that's cool.
Okay.
Okay, so next week. Please stay.
All right.
Me ahora te quita la descarga. nuestras miradas se tropiezan y se asustan, y en un instante se acarician, se disfrutan y se alejan después.